Karine Jean-Pierre walks out of press conference after Fox News pressed her on government's disaster response.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. We will be taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Will Haynes joins me in studio, executive producer of Seculo. We're going to be a packed show. We got CeCe Hyle joining us and Harry Hutchinson a bit later. We also have some messaging about Hurricane Milton, which is obviously building in Florida right now. We know it will hit in the next few days. And we have some messaging that was sent to us from our friend CFO Jimmy Petronas. So if you're one of our listeners in Florida, stay tuned. We'll make sure we get to some of those as we are actively monitoring that as well as obviously praying for everyone in Florida. Florida, Will and I's hometown, Central Florida, is where we grew up. So, of course, it's a pretty, after just last week hitting our home state of Tennessee, now to have one hitting our hometown, our original hometown of Orlando, Florida, that is something that we are actively monitoring. But of course, we want to keep you updated on the news as well. There has been some news that are related to the hurricane. That, of course, is the controversy that has come out between the Biden administration, the Harris campaign, which put out that statement last week, saying, hey, we're going to be giving $150 million more dollars to Lebanon. But then on the other side, you have FEMA saying, essentially, we are out of money for hurricane relief and having to get more money approved. There was a pushback and a conversation that happened during the press conference yesterday with obviously with Ducey from Fox News and with KJP. We're gonna play that in the next segment, so stay tuned for that. We are gonna want to hear from you though, whether you in Florida preparing for this hurricane, whether you are curious about that work and the fact that money is being not diverted to the American citizens, but is being diverted to Lebanon and other places around the world. When we know what's happening in North Carolina still, we know what's happening in Eastern Tennessee. We know what's happening in a lot of these small towns. That's why we had on Tulsi Gabbard yesterday, who's on the ground there with her organization doing a lot of good work. There's a lot of great people, Samaritan's Purse and others that are there doing the work the government probably should be doing. But of course, in this moment, they're nowhere to be found or a lot less than you would hope. It's really one of those moments where you should wake up because the federal government, you know, we were not necessarily big fans of the federal government, them getting involved in a lot of things. But there are certain moments where what you feel like your taxpayer dollar should go to is something like this. You want to make sure your roads are safe. You want to make sure we can fly safely with the FAA. And of course, if a disaster happens like this, you want to make sure your government to be there to help if you can. Of course, Will, in these situations, that is not what's happening.
That's right. And when you look at what the priorities of this administration have been over the last 3.5 years, it's shocking when, and we'll play the clips in the next segment, when someone asks the administration, hey, you're able to easily just write a check to Lebanon without going through Congress. But yet when there is a real disaster here at home, you're saying, hey, we're going to run out of money and we're going to need Congress to come back from recess and reappropriate money so that we can help American citizens. That is the stark contrast and why I think that the left doesn't understand the power of the MAGA movement and the Make America Great Again movement and the America First movement. Because what it means is that, hey, you can dole out cash all around the world, it seeming endlessly, and even in the case of Ukraine, where over $1 billion is untrackable. They don't know where it went. It didn't go for the purposes that it meant. But so we just wasted $1 billion in that case. But yet it's like pulling teeth to get people that need real help, that are American citizens, that pay their taxes, the help they need in such a unprecedented disaster.
Yeah, there's also conversations that happened with Ron DeSantis in Florida, talking about his conversations with the administration or lack of conversations with the administration. Because look, we are not trying to politicize storm. I think Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, not trying to politicize the storm. CFO Jimmy Petronas, who's also the fire marshal, not trying to politicize the storm. But unfortunately, it feels like everything is politicized. Everything has its motivation and none of it feels like it's to help the American people. We're going to do our best to stand up where we can, support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org, and give us a call. Phone lines are open. We got four lines open, 1-800-684-3110. Seculo. Yeah, this is Logan Seculo. We got a couple phone lines still open at 1-800-684-3110. I did want to kick us off, now that we've headed into the second segment, got a little bit longer time, we can actually talk about this. When you may see the title right now on YouTube or Rumble, if you don't watch our broadcast, you should. It's a better experience to see us and talk with us and chat if you're in the live chat on YouTube or Rumble. It's always a fun time. Karine Jean-Pierre, you may have seen the title, said walked out after Fox News asked this. You may be wondering, what is that? If you're listening on radio, if you saw on video, you may have gotten to see a little bit of a tease, but this was a bit of a conversation between Peter Ducey and Karine Jean-Pierre. This was the press conference yesterday. Now, this is pretty long, I have to say. We got a couple bites here. This was a ongoing debate, but I think you should see it since we got a little bit more time. So let's see how it started, and then we'll go from there. Let's start with bite two.
This issue of funding. The administration has money to send to Lebanon without Congress coming back. But Congress does have to come back to approve money to send to people in North Carolina. Do I have that right?
Here's what I'm going to be very clear about. The president and the vice president has had a robust whole of government response to this. Hundreds of millions of dollars. I said it at the top, more than $200 million that we have directly put towards survivors here for disaster help. And that's because of this president's commitment to make sure that we are there for communities that are impacted. We take this very seriously again. We take this very seriously. And before the hurricane hit, we pre-positioned more than 1,500 federal folks on the ground to help. And so we have made sure that every state has gotten their storm-requested emergency declaration. They requested it, and we made sure they received it. We've taken this very seriously. More than $200 million that we have provided to the impacted areas. But instead, people want to do disinformation, misinformation, which is dangerous. Which is dangerous. Because then when folks on the ground hear that, they may not want to ask for the help that they need. That is there for them. That is there for them. That's our focus here.
Of course, when they're hearing is misinformation, disinformation, some fun buzzwords to throw you off because they go, they may not ask for what they need. Well, at this point, I feel like the government should be there. I don't even know if they should be doing the asking.
That's right. And when you listen to that and how she tries to lay out all the things they're doing, at the same time, President Biden sent a letter to Congress saying you need to come back and provide more funds. When you listen to that, she goes through what they're doing, trying to make it seem like we're working very hard. And then ends it with, flips it on him, says people want to do disinformation and misinformation, which is dangerous. And the problem with that is that when you are speaking for the president at a time like this, when you see the imagery out of North Carolina and East Tennessee and Georgia and Florida, and then you know another catastrophic storm, one of the strongest recorded storms in history, is coming straight for Florida, and you hear her saying a simple question about reality is misinformation or disinformation, that infuriates Americans.
Yeah,
it really does.
It keeps going. So the conversation didn't stop there. So let's keep going. Bite three. Now you get to hear a little bit more of this discussion.
People want to do disinformation, misinformation, which is dangerous, because then when folks on the ground hear that, they may not want to ask for the help that they need. That is there for them. That is there for them. That's our focus here.
But President Biden is fond of saying, show me your budget and I will tell you what you value. If he's got money for people in Lebanon right now without Congress having to come back, what does it say about his values? There's not enough money right now for
his
people
values,
in North Carolina
his,
who need it. That's not misinformation.
Wait, no, that is your whole premise of the question is misinformation, sir.
Excuse
what you don't
me?
Yes,
which
it's misinformation.
I just mentioned
to you that we provided more than $200 million to folks who are impacted in the area, and I just shared with you that people are deciding
Congress that there's not enough money to help people.
We're
in North
talking
Carolina
about the SBA disaster loan.
That's
yes.
money for people in North Carolina,
and that's important. And people in North Carolina need that.
So
wait, this is nothing new,
right
Peter. This is nothing new. Congress comes together, they provide money, millions of dollars, for disaster relief. We're asking them to do the job that they have been doing for some time.
From a letter that President Biden sent to Johnson, McConnell, time. Schumer, and Jeffries. The president's letter is not misinformation. Would you agree?
No, the way you're asking me the question is misinformation. There is money that we are allocating to the impacted areas, and there's money there to help people who truly need it. There are survivors who need the funding, who need the funding.
It feels like this could have been cut off way earlier. She could have made her statement without getting into that misinformation, disinformation verbiage. When you start doing that, those are, almost dog whistles at this point,
right,
where people on the left go, oh, that's all this is, a Republican talking point. And then, of course, people on the right go, well, if you're using words like misinformation, disinformation, you pretty much invalidated your entire discussion beforehand, because we know what that really means. And what that really means is usually censorship, and not being honest with the American people. You know, it gives us flashbacks to the last election.
Right. And honestly, when she goes through that, if she were to explain everything she did in the first one, and then even, I'm sure there is a technical government answer about,
yes,
those funds for emergency to Lebanon were already allocated by Congress, and it was discretionary spending at that point. But FEMA is, because of the size of this disaster, tapped out, and we need more funds allocated because Congress has the power of the purse. She could have done all that without then trying to label a news network that's in there with credentials and passes to ask questions as essentially fake news, and saying that they are spreading misinformation and disinformation and calling them dangerous. That's something they used to criticize President Trump about, was saying that he was making the job of journalists very hard and it was dangerous for them because of that. That's exactly what Karine Jean-Pierre is doing here. She is taking it to a level where it's making everyone think that, oh, this person is spreading lies and misinformation. They normally tack on to Russia, that you're just spreading talking points to meddle in the election coming out of Russia. That's all this feels like. And in him being asking a very legitimate question that's on the mind of, I guarantee you, millions of people in Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee, but millions and millions, tens of millions of people across the country, about why this is so hard to take care of the American people before doling out cash to a country that is not filled with many allies of the United States.
Not exactly friendly.
That when there needs to be humanitarian aid, how about you start at home? How about you get that figured out? Because we know that storms are creating havoc. And if it is a part of your climate change agenda, why wasn't your Green New Deal light that they passed with the Inflation Reduction Act, why wasn't that beefing up the ability to take care of Americans at home? Because it's not their priority. Their priority is non-citizens that live in other countries.
The priority is political gain. And what gets you the most votes is making yourself look like you really care about people, but not actually doing it when it's your own. I mean, that's just the truth of it. It's sad. It's sad because it sounds nice in a tweet to say you're sending out $150 million to Lebanon. Even when you say that, $150 additional million dollars, and you're like, well, we gave $200 million to North Carolina. I don't know. Maybe there should be a little bit more discrepancy in those numbers. Maybe there should be more going to our own people, into North Carolina, into the South, where it's needed right now, instead of going across the world, like you said, to non-friendly areas. Now, the conversation kept going. This is kind of how it wrapped up. Let's hear Bite 4. Let's go to the final conversation, the final discussion between KJP and Peter Doocy.
And it's there.
That you don't like misinformation.
I said I actually said we have the money available to help survivors of Hurricane Helene and also Hurricane Milton. Now there's going to be a shortfall, right? Because we don't know how bad Hurricane Milton is going to be. And so we're going to need additional funding.
That's exactly what I just asked about. And you said it was misinformation.
Yes. What you're asking me is why Congress needs to come back and do their job. That's what you're asking me. Congress needs to come back and do their job and provide extra assistance, extra funding to disaster relief fund. That's what Congress needs to do, and we're going to continue to urge that. You may not want that, but that's okay. That's what this president wants, and that's what the vice president wants. Thanks, everybody.
And she just walks out angrily. I mean, it is kind of a ridiculous moment when a real legitimate question happened. Look, this is what you want, by the way. I want someone, look, even if it was a Republican president, I want someone in that press room to push, to get the real answers. So I'm happy Peter Doocy exists. I want someone in there to hold accountable our administrations, even if we disagree with them fundamentally, at least give them the answers that they're looking for. But instead, you're going to label it disinformation, misinformation, as we are on the precipice of what could be one of the biggest storms in our lifetime. And I'm nervous about it. I'm praying for everybody in Florida. I got friends in Florida. I got property in Florida, if I'm being honest. I'm someone who's been a Floridian, part-time Floridian, for the majority of my life. And with that, we're going to actually, in the next segment, talk a little bit about, we reached out to our friend Jimmy Petronis, who is the CFO and fire marshal for the state of Florida. And he is going to, and we have some talking points that they've given us to share with our listenership. We're going to do that as well coming up in the next segment. Also, a really interesting reveal from an unlikely source about the truth behind third trimester abortions. It's become a real big topic, whether they exist or don't exist. And guess what? We were right. We'll be right back with that. Welcome back to Seculo. Cece Hiles joining us in studio. I did quickly, before we get to our next topic, want to tell you, if you are in Florida and you are concerned about the hurricane, which I believe you should be if you are in that path, we encourage you to go to preparefl.com. It has all your storm-related resources and information from the state. Emergency prepared toolkit designed to help you prepare for the home inventory, organize your financial information for before and after the storm. And it also will guide to inform consumers on insurance and financial preparation in the event of this potential disaster. The guide also to flood insurance and tips on what to expect filing home insurance claims related to this hurricane. Again, I'm going to encourage you to go to preparefl.com. That is was sent to us from Jimmy Petronis' office, who is the CFO of the state of Florida. We reached out to him this morning and said, how can we make sure our audience is prepared and ready for this? And they sent us that information. Again, they urge Floridians to take necessary precautions to prepare their homes and property ahead of Hurricane Milton. And of course, if you had the opportunity to evacuate, you still do, and you feel like you should, that is something that they're encouraging as well. So again, that's at preparefl.com.
And I have one note on that as well. Yeah. From the office of the CFO of Florida, Jimmy Petronis, 51 of the 67 Florida counties are currently under a declared state of emergency. So it is a whole of Florida approach that they are having to take there. And that also, if you are in Florida, you are likely in a declared state of emergency right now. So make sure you go to preparefl.com and get the information you need to stay safe.
All right. So we appreciate that. If you want to call in, if you have a question or comment, keep your phones charged, though. 1-800-684-3110. I know we have some calls from Florida. We'll get to those coming up in the next segment, as we'll take some more calls. Cece Hiles joining us right now because there's an interesting move in the conversation about life. And this has been something that has come up from time to time, and it really kind of hit in the recent debates. The discussion is happening. Of course, the discussion is about late-term abortions and what that really looks like. And Will, from an interesting source, The Atlantic, the headline is, yes, third trimester abortions are happening in America.
That's right. And the subheading of that is, Democrats tend to brush off questions about whether these abortions should be restricted. We did see that in the debates. We also saw that there was the fact checks from the moderators in the Harris-Trump debate that tried to also give cover for Kamala Harris when she was talking about how she wants to return to Roe v. Wade. But Cece, this Atlantic piece, which still tries to give some cover because of their perspective on the debate of abortion, for the reasoning of these, but it reveals, and in shocking detail, that these are much more common than even I, as someone who works for an organization that advocates for life and reads a lot of this and feel very informed about this discussion, kind of shocked me to the degree that this is happening.
Yeah. And, you know, we can go back to the presidential debate or the vice presidential debate where, you know, when President Trump had said these abortions are happening in the 7th and 8th and 9th month, and Kamala Harris said, you know, that's just absolutely not true. And then, of course, you have, Walz saying basically the same, or skirting that statement, even though he signed a law like this as governor, allowing these late-term abortions to happen. And so here you have, you know, the facts actually coming out that, yes, they do happen. And in this article, they said, you know, just in one state, so there's 9 states and DC that allow these late term abortions. And in just one state where they could actually get numbers, in Colorado, there was 137 of these late term abortions. And what you have to understand is when we're talking about the third trimester, we're talking about 28 weeks. Now, a baby can live at 22 weeks. So really, even though they'll try to say, well, this is to save the life of a mother, but you never have to murder the child to save the life of the mother. These late term abortions, the babies can be delivered and live. And so it's a subject they don't want to talk about because 80% of Americans, almost 80% of Americans, have said they don't support third trimester abortions. And yet the Democrats are still trying to spin it and say, no, they don't happen, but they do. And maybe to the tune of, we don't know the exact number, but at least 1,000 if we go from what Colorado has of 137 in just one state.
Yeah, we know if those numbers are equal across the board, and as you said, Colorado, not exactly the most populated state. If it's 100 plus in each one of these states, which we can roughly guess, that's it. Yeah, you're talking about 1,000 of these third trimester partial birth abortions, essentially, that were be occurring. And as someone who had premature children and went through the NICU process and all of that, I've seen how strong a lot of these children are. It is not for the faint of heart. It is the toughest thing I've ever been through, and I assume we'll probably ever go through. However, it is a incredible feat of technology that's moved forward that allows these children who are born very early to have a chance at a full life. So when you do have these moments, when you have someone like The Atlantic coming out saying, no, we need to fact check this ourselves, and you need to be at least honest with yourself. I think that's what the Democratic argument has lacked, which is just honest with themselves. They became a little bit more when all of a sudden it became, they started using the word abortion. Mm. Because for a long time, it was like the word you never said. It was choice. It was other words, but we never actually
reproductive health.
And then they started embracing the word abortion. They started embracing the sort of murder side of this, if we're just being honest.
Right.
Now, when the facts start coming out and the reality starts to set in, they start to distance themselves from it, but they just simply can't.
And when you read this article as well, and kind of that point, the Democrats have doubled down thinking this is their issue that's going to get moderates in, you know, suburban areas to vote for them in November. And I think to some degree, they've been effective at it. But what they're not telling you is how extreme their platform really is. And when you read this article from The Atlantic, they interviewed a doctor who specializes in late abortions, and he estimated about half of his patients have healthy pregnancies. So even that argument that they're so rare, it only happens when there is a fetal abnormality or or the life and death of health of the mother, then this argument starts to crumble when even half of those are healthy pregnancies. So there's no real reason medically that they could argue that these are happening. But they also take the Democrats to task, saying that most Americans, as CeCe pointed out, believe that third trimester abortion should be restricted. If Democrats want a platform that truly reflects majority opinion, they should address the question of what to do about later abortions, adopt a position that protects abortion in the first trimester while limiting the second, and third trimester abortions to pregnancies with fetal abnormalities and maternal health crises. CeCe, I think they used a word in that paragraph that it strikes me ironically that the Democrats should adopt a position that protects first trimester abortions. But what they're leaving out here is that the work the ACLJ does to protect PRCs and sidewalk counselors, we want to focus on that word adopt, because there are options for people out there.
Absolutely. And adoption is an option. And that is when they talk about maternal health crisis. Again, when the baby's in the third trimester, that child can live. So just to go ahead and have that child, you know, be born. And then, yes, we can get into adoption. There are options, so you don't have to murder the child.
Yeah, we're working on a lot of different ways we can present those options to the American people right now at the ACLJ. So I encourage you to do that. Look, I know this is a tough topic to discuss. No one really on their lunch break or sitting around going, I really want to talk about late-term abortions. But it's true, and it's happening. We need to at least address it. So right now, I'm going to encourage you to go to aclj.org. We also got involved in the... It's supporting Israel. We're going to discuss that when we get back from this coming up. If you don't get us for the full half, our full next half hour, join us right now live, aclj.org, YouTube, or on Rumble. I saw some people putting in again, preparefl.com if you're looking for hurricane preparedness in Florida. We'll be right back with the second half hour of Secular.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
It's Logan Seculo. We are live. I still have CeCe Heil joining us in studio, as well as Will Haynes, executive producer. I did want to quickly say again, and I'm going to ask our social team to put this in the chat. Our friends at the CFO Office of Florida have asked us to put out preparefl.com. That's the website. If you're in Florida and you're looking for hurricane preparation, preparefl.com. Again, we want to encourage you, if you are in that path, which as Will said, is the mass majority of the state of Florida, one of my favorite places in the world, place I'm proud to be a property owner of, and I have been a part-time citizen for the last 25 years. So I am a big fan of the state of Florida, and I'm praying for everybody there. And I also know they got an incredible team on the ground. They've got, like I said, our friend CFO and Fire Marshal Jimmy Patronis, as well as obviously great governor in Ron DeSantis. So we'll be monitoring that. But CeCe, I also wanted to discuss, yesterday was the October 7th terrorist attack anniversary, a horrible one, one that was really tough to even think about, obviously, as thousands of people have been killed. But just yesterday, even 100 rockets were launched into Israel. So, you know, time didn't stop for the morning. It still is happening. And we just made a critical oral intervention at the UN. Maybe explain what that is and what it was that we did yesterday.
Yeah. So yesterday we actually sent a letter to 42 member states who abstained from voting. Well, actually two of them voted for, but this was the General Assembly resolution that condemned Israel and basically put all the onus on Israel for what is going on, for the Hamas attack, and saying Israel needs to stop this, although they are simply defending themselves. So we sent a letter to those countries that abstained from voting and basically provided the information of why they need to support Israel, of, you know, why they should not abstain, that they need to engage and they need to vote, and they needed to vote against this resolution. And then we went after France and Ireland, because those were two countries that actually voted for this resolution condemning Israel and basically saying you should be ashamed. This is the one country that is the bastion of democracy in the Middle East. They are our ally. They are defending themselves. They have the legal right to do so, and we need to stand by them.
Yeah, I want to encourage you to support the work of the ACLJ, because when you hear what CeCe was doing, when you hear about these 42 letters we had to send out to defend Israel, to be there. The ECLJ is there. It's the European Center. The ACLJ is there. And our teams are mobilized to make sure that we're able to be your voice wherever we can. And of course, that also includes our office in Jerusalem. At ACLJ Jerusalem, you hear Jeff Balaban on this broadcast all the time, who runs our office in Jerusalem. None of that can happen without your support. We are supported, the mass majority. We were just doing some of the accounting yesterday, looking at it. We are majorly supported. The mass majority of people give a gift of $50. This is not an organization that is funded on the backs of gigantic supporters who, you know, strike checks for millions of dollars. There are some great people who do that. We obviously love that. We appreciate that. But the mass majority of the people that donate, donate small amounts, and it's just hundreds of thousands of you that do that. And that is amazing. And we couldn't do this incredible work or this broadcast without you. So I'm going to encourage you right now, become an ACLJ supporter or an ACLJ champion and stand for Israel. You can be a champion for Israel. Stand with us. A champion is someone that gives on a monthly recurring basis. You just set it, forget it. Of course, you can cancel anytime. Your donations are tax deductible. And support us by becoming an ACLJ champion if you can. Over 20,000 of you are ACLJ champions, which is incredible. But of course, that's just a small percentage of the people that give one-time gifts. But the ACLJ is there where you need it, CeCe. The ACLJ can be there. Whether that is at the UN,
yep,
or anywhere around the world.
That's right. I was able to do two oral interventions last week defending Israel, and then we were able to send letters encouraging states, member states, to support Israel, and we will continue to do so, but we cannot do that without your support.
That's right. Go to ACLJ.org. Phone lines are open. We got one line open right now, 1-800-684-3110. A bunch of you have been on hold for about a half an hour. Michael, and Lynn, stay on hold. We're going to get to you. It's just been a packed show. Harry Hutchinson's going to join us in the next segment to discuss a bit of movement and a bit of coverage of course, our favorite Jack Smith and what he is up to and what the political ramifications may be. So stay tuned for that. Again, support the work of the ACLJ by going to ACLJ.org. Stand with Israel and stand with our friends here in America as well. We'll be right back. joining us in studio. Again, I want to encourage you, if you're in the state of Florida looking for hurricane preparation, go to preparefl.com. I know you don't hear me usually promote anything other than our own website, but that's from our friend, CFO, Jimmy Petronas, who's been on this broadcast before. And obviously, there is a lot going on there as well from Governor DeSantis. We'll hear from him a little bit later. But Harry, I wanted to move to this very interesting article that came from the New York Magazine about Jack Smith. And of course, Jack Smith dropped that, 165-page manifesto, if you will, right. Which we all said felt just like playing politics. It felt like election interference 101. But here we are.
And Harry, we look at this. This is written by Ellie Honig, who is the chief legal analyst over at CNN. You know, we know where his bias may lie, but there's one thing you can say about Ellie Honig is that he is the most intellectually honest legal analyst, definitely in the left world. But he calls this Jack Smith's October surprise. And in one iteration of the article, they called it Jack Smith's October cheap shot. What's he laying out here about this massive brief that Jack Smith filed and got unsealed to a degree at the end of last week?
Essentially, and Eli Honig is a liberal, but he's a principled liberal. He's pointing out that Jack Smith essentially is an unprincipled prosecutor pursuing an unprincipled motion. Keep in mind that Jack Smith, in his filing, is filing with respect to Donald Trump's immunity claim. And essentially, Jack Smith has filed with Judge Chutkan, the judge in the so-called election interference case, a motion that is designed to be preemptive. Number one. Number two, it's designed to taint the jury pool in the future. But number three, and most importantly, it's designed to taint the election in favor of a particular outcome. And so I think at the end of the day, Eli Honig lays out what is wrong and unprincipled with this particular filing. And he quotes at the end of his article, Sally Yates, a former deputy attorney general who was actually fired by Donald Trump. She said, if the prosecutors bend their principles depending on the identity of the prey, then they have no principles at all. So what we have is an unprincipled prosecution by an unprincipled prosecutor who ultimately, I think we can safely conclude, is an unprincipled human being.
There's a lot of interesting content that comes out of this, and there's one at the end of one of the paragraphs, kind of goes through two different scenarios. One explains some of the revelations that are contained in Smith's brief, which he calls an oversized brief. But then the last one says, the larger, if less obvious headline is that Smith has essentially abandoned any pretense. He'll bend any rule, switch up any practice, so as long as he gets to chip away at Trump's electoral prospects. At this point, there's simply no defending Smith's conduct on any sort of institutional basis.
That's right. And this is what's so surprising. In some of the TV interviews that Ellie Honig did for CNN after he wrote this piece for New York Magazine, he compared it to what James Comey did to Hillary Clinton, where she reopened the case right before the election. And many people think that was very detrimental to her election prospects. Now, I don't think that was the only thing that ended her run for presidency, but it was definitely an October surprise no one accounted for that definitely hurt her electoral prospects. And even Hillary Clinton went on MSNBC and tried to say, no, they're completely different. They're completely different because Trump, I believe, is a criminal and needs to go to jail. But Ellie Honig then even pushed back more and said, no, when you're looking at this, from his article, at this point, there is simply no defending Smith's conduct on any sort of principled or institutional basis. But we need to know this stuff before we vote is a nice bumper sticker. But it's neither a response nor an excuse for Smith's unprincipled, norm-breaking practice. It also overlooks the fact that the Justice Department bears responsibility for taking over 2.5 years to indict in the first place. Harry, this is very critical of the Department of Justice and Jack Smith and basically accusing them of election interference.
Absolutely. And so if we take up the question of why did the Justice Department wait 2.5 years before bringing the prosecution? They waited 2.5 years before bringing the prosecution of Donald Trump to the fore, likely because they wanted to drop this prosecution right in the midst of an election season. They did not want Trump to be vindicated, particularly on appeal. So how do you do that? You schedule the indictment so that it happens or drops just before the election is going to take place, 6 or 9 months before the election takes place. Then that will take some time, for instance, a verdict to be appealed by Donald Trump. Honig also notes that Smith's motion on Trump's immunity claim is exactly backwards because under the federal rules of prosecution, the prosecutor files an indictment, then the defense makes motions to dismiss the charges, then the prosecutor responds to defense motions. Here, we've got a preemptive effort, and even Judge Chutkan acknowledge that this was indeed an irregular filing. Essentially, I think it's safe to conclude that Jack Smith has engaged in a huge amount of irregular behavior throughout his career. And famously, remember, he prosecuted the governor of Virginia. He won a verdict at the trial level, but guess what? The Supreme Court reversed Jack Smith unanimously. And so we have a pattern and practice by Jack Smith in terms of overcharging or alternatively not complying with the rules of civil procedure or alternatively complying with the law. And I think at the end of the day, hopefully the American people will see through this effort by Jack Smith.
I want you to hear from the source himself. This is from Honig on CNN yesterday. First, you're going to hear from Hillary Clinton and get the response. Again, this is from yesterday on CNN. It's Bite 6. Here you go.
It was, frankly, motivated by the orders of the judge in this trial, who has, it appears to me, been extremely favorable toward Trump. So I think that there's nothing out of the ordinary.
What do you think about that, Ellie?
Yeah, Jessica, well, all respect to Secretary Clinton. She's the one who suffered the consequences for James Comey's, I believe, outrageous conduct in 2016. DOJ found later that it was outrageous. The problem, though, with Secretary Clinton's analysis of the Jack Smith case is, respectfully, she's got her facts wrong. First of all, she's confusing the judges here. I think she's thinking of Judge Cannon, who, yes, has ruled almost entirely for Donald Trump, but that's the judge in the other case. The judge here is Judge Chutkan. I get it, similar names. Judge Chutkan has ruled almost entirely against Donald Trump. More to the point, the last thing we just heard Secretary Clinton say was, quote, "There is nothing out of the ordinary." But as I described before, the way they flip this procedure is the opposite of the ordinary.
Yeah, the opposite of the ordinary. I encourage you to take a look at that because, again, sometimes you're shocked. Whether you get The Atlantic, you got New York, you got all these content creators right now and writers putting out content that you may actually agree with. It doesn't feel slanted or biased. It feels like we're actually getting some honesty out of it. Again, even if you disagree with their points of view and their political points of view, you can at least say they are being honest to the American people. I encourage you right now, speaking of the American people, I like to hear from you. So we got two lines open right now. Give me a call at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110 to have your voice heard today. Again, as you heard, we are standing up for Israel this week. It is obviously the 1-year anniversary of the October 7th attacks. And of course, rockets still being launched into Israel even yesterday. No days of mourning in Israel, no calm. It's just pure chaos. But unfortunately, the American people seem to have forgotten or seem to have turned their back. I was encouraged by some people last night that I saw posting a lot of great content that they have made talking to people on the streets about this and trying to change some hearts and change some minds. That's part of what the ACLJ does here as well through this broadcast and our other media outlets. Of course, we're going to be there in the law. We're going to be there in the court. We're going to be helping changing the law. But sometimes we got to also be there to change hearts, change minds. We're doing that currently for Israel. We're doing that for our new pro-life campaign that we're going to be rolling out around the country, helping support crisis pregnancy centers. We're going to start in Massachusetts. We've been working on that really hard. And we got a lot of great content coming out. It's all about spreading the hope and joy that still can exist, even in America that sometimes looks a little not familiar to a lot of us. I did want to encourage you also, if you're in the state of Florida, go to prepareFL.com and make sure you are ready for this pending hurricane that'll be hitting very soon. So stay up to date on that. Go to ACLJ.org also to support and give me a call. We actually have four lines open, 1-800-684-3110. I want to hear from you. Welcome back to Seculo. In this segment, we like to take as many calls as we can at 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. Let's go ahead. Let's go to Lynn, who's calling, listening on the radio in Washington on line 5. Lynn, you're on the air.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a statement that I know a lot of people are really thinking about, and that is this. I hope there's some congressional leaders that are listening to this. We put financial aid all across this world. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. And I fail to understand how $750 is enough. I would support Congress immediately freezing all foreign aid until all those communities down in Helen on the hurricane victims, all of their homes, all of their cars, all of their communities, their infrastructure, roads, everything is completely replaced free, all the way down to all their belongings to a salt shaker.
Lynn,
I think if we can do this.
Yep, go ahead. Yeah, I think, Lynn, I think that a lot of people feel that way. Here's how I feel. Look, do I think that, a lot of the foreign aid is getting out of hand and that we're spending way too much money? Absolutely. Do I also think we should be able to do both in some ways? Yes, I do feel like there should be situations where we're able to help on a international level, where the American people do support certain assistance in that way. We are humanitarians at our core. However, when they don't support our own people, yeah, that becomes a little bit of an issue. Because a lot of issue with a lot of people. But I do believe in an American experience where both of those can happen, where we can support our people while also helping where we can around the world.
That's right. And I think that this is where the Democrats especially don't understand the America First agenda and the MAGA movement, is that it goes back to like what Lynn was saying, is that why can we keep spending around the world billions and billions to Ukraine, billions and billions around the world, but with no, when something like this happens, it seems like pulling teeth to help American citizens. And that's all people want. They want, when something that is, it's not a handout for no reason. There is a natural disaster of biblical proportions, as they've been saying, apocalyptic scene that no one would have ever been prepared for. There was at no fault of the individual that lived in Western North Carolina that this catastrophic storm came through and took everything they own. But yet when Karine Jean-Pierre even talks about we're giving assistance, there's SBA loans. They're giving Small Business Administration loans to small businesses. I don't think anyone in Lebanon is going to have to pay back foreign aid.
No, I don't think so.
You're giving loans, and I'm sure there's a forgiveness and all this, but these are things you're having to apply for.
Yeah.
There are people on the ground in Lebanon that are getting handouts and humanitarian aid, and American citizens are having to apply for aid from the federal government.
It should be another wake-up call to the American people aware there needs to be reform in our government, and that's just the truth, because there are moments. Like I said, we're not for the federal government getting too involved in everything you're doing in your life. However, you do pay taxes, and those taxes should be going to things like, I don't know, storm relief to those who have no choice, no decision-making power in what has happened to their homes. North Carolina's never been hit like this. Eastern Tennessee never been hit like this from a storm. But of course, it can't be that easy. And that is why we're encouraging our listeners in the state of Florida to take caution, to be careful and to go to that website, go to preparefl.com to stay attuned of what's happening. Let's go ahead and take another call. Let's go to Michael, who's calling in California, who's watching on Rumble. Michael, you've been hold since the second segment. I appreciate you waiting.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, it's been talked about in the news. Fox News has reported that they used FEMA money, if I'm saying it correctly, to house migrants of in a tune of billions of dollars. And I grew up in a time where there was an old saying, charity starts at home, then spreads abroad. And if this is true, you still have the local news in different areas saying that it never happened. And then the person that runs FEMA says, oh, no, it didn't happen. But I was listening to people on the ground from the Sean Hannity show talking about the fact that where's FEMA? They are nowhere around. Samaritan Purse, Donald Trump, Elon Musk. All those people are on the ground shortly after it happened, and Donald Trump said out of his own mouth, my campaign can be put on hold right now. People need our help. And that it just frustrates me, as you've been saying earlier, and the caller said, we can help other people, but we can't help our citizens, our neighbors, the ones that they swore when they came into office that they were going to take care of.
And Michael, what you are referencing is that there were statements and things that started to get out that FEMA had diverted funds to migrants. And so the FEMA administrator and Karine Jean-Pierre were all coming out saying that is false. And Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, actually clarified the statement that there is money being used by FEMA to house migrants, that that is a part of their budget. And it honestly admits that there is an emergency that the administration didn't like to talk about with all these migrants incoming. So FEMA was the organization that has been paying a lot of the housing cost for the migrant emergency. Now, where the administrator and Karine Jean-Pierre tried to say is that, yeah, but that's not being diverted away from disaster relief. At the end of the day, it's still American taxpayer dollars using the Federal Emergency Management Agency to house migrants when they are concerned about a budget shortfall when it comes to the disasters that American citizens are facing. So they're trying to be cute and be technical, saying, no, we didn't divert any funds away from the emergency funds. They're talking about two different pools of money. But yes, FEMA is indeed paying for housing of migrants that come into the United States.
Yeah. Do we have time to play the Ron DeSantis?
I think we do.
This is Ron DeSantis also talking about storm relief and the conversations he's had with the administration. We teased it earlier. I wanted you to hear it before we wrap up today's show.
And we've been laser focused on leveraging all resources available, including from the federal government. And I've been in touch with both FEMA and the president, as well as marshaling all our state agencies and working to support our local communities. And so for Kamala Harris to try to say that my sole focus on the people of Florida is somehow selfish is delusional. She has no role in this. In fact, she's been vice president for 3.5 years. I've dealt with a number of storms under this administration. She has never contributed anything to any of these efforts. And so what I think is selfish
has she ever
is her trying
before?
To blunder into this. No. And here's
has
the
she
thing.
Ever called before?
She has no role. No, she has no role in this process. I'm in contact with the president of the United States. I'm in contact with FEMA director. I'm obviously managing all our state agencies. We're supporting all our local government. And I will say this. I've had storms under both President Trump and President Biden, and I've worked well with both of them. She's the first one who's trying to politicize the storm, and she's doing that just because of her campaign. She's trying to get some.
Let's remember to not politicize when these storms happen, when people are in need. So I'm glad there's a governor like Ron DeSantis in the state of Florida who's willing to say that, who's willing to do that, who's willing to focus. I'm glad there are people like CFO Petronas who is out there making sure people are prepared, ready, and safe as they can be as this catastrophic storm hits Florida coming up in the next day. We're going to monitor it. Go to preparefl.com again. That's not our website. That's our friend, CFO Petronas, and he has really laid out ways you can check it out. Again, support the work of the ACLJ. Go to ACLJ.org. We'll be praying for all of our Florida listeners and obviously all of our friends in North Carolina and Tennessee. We'll talk to you tomorrow.